Genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brain.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turning now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're on every day, Monday through Friday, following the Freeman Michaels Show here on KKZZ AM 1400, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura County. You can also hear us streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura County. If all of this sounds like National Public Radio, well, you're getting the idea. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is NPR done right. If you want to join in the conversation, you can always call us at 639-0008, 639-0008, or if you're outside of the county, that's area code 805-639-0008. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is, what is the government doing? Both of my guests are here to comment on what steps the government is taking to address both job creation and child safety on the internet. My first guest is analyzing President Obama's proposed economic stimulus plan. We're going to examine it together and see if it will indeed create new jobs and stimulate the economy. Bill Sinclair has spent much of his career in Washington, D.C. Try not to hold that against him, though, folks. He knows top policymakers there who are creating policy today. Bill Sinclair is an experienced professional in the financial services arena for more than 35 years. During his career, get this, he has been active faculty member at the Federal Reserve System, the Mortgage Bankers Association, AT&T's Banking School, the Federal Financial Institutions Examination Council, and he served as an expert on mortgages and investment bankings in secondary markets. He served as the president of the Greater Washington Board of Trade, as well as the boards of the Federal Home Loan Bank of Atlanta, the Republic Mortgage Insurance Company, the Greater Washington Financial Institutions, and on it goes. You get the idea. As a business leader, a banker, and a political analyst, Bill is here today to comment on President Obama's economic stimulus plan that he presented in a speech in Detroit, Michigan, just yesterday. Welcome to the show, Bill. How are you today?
Thank you. Very good.
Oh, good. Glad to have you here. So let's just recap it for those listeners who may not have seen it live or read it in the newspaper. President Obama in Detroit, Michigan, presented his plan for economic stimulus. Three key ideas were proposed in his plan yesterday. Number one was expand and permanently extend the research and development tax credit that expired back in 2009. Step two, allow businesses to write off 100% of their investments in equipment and plant all the way through the year 2011. And step three, pump another $50 billion into highway, rail, airport, and other infrastructure projects. So my question is, if these three actions are enacted, will they in fact stimulate job and economic growth?
I seriously doubt it, Billy, because the administration, they call it the summer of recovery. I call it the bummer summer. It's fizzled basically in almost every way imaginable. The growth rate today is less than half of what it was at this stage after the 74 and the 81 recession. So if we take a look at it that way, look, so far, they've spent almost $3.5 trillion trying to turn this economy around.
Mm-hmm.
The Fed's balance sheet has been expanded from $795 billion to $2.5 trillion. At the same time, we had $168 billion stimulus in January of 08, then $850 in September, and then the current administration's $862 billion. So you put all that together, and it's kind of sad that our GDP in the second quarter was just reduced to 1.6% growth.
Right.
We can't grow the economy the way that it should be to get us out of this recession. The fear today is, are we going to go into a double dip? Now, many economists are saying that there's a 50% plus chance of that happening. because everything the president seems to do just doesn't work. That's what's very scary about the whole thing. Look, we look at this $3.5 trillion, and the administration seems to say, well, we've created about 609,000 or saved jobs. They can't seem to break it down as to what's really happening. At the same time, Christine Romer stated that if we pass the $862 billion stimulus right away, which has to be done, we will hold unemployment at 8%, grow the economy in the right direction, and reduce the deficit. Guess what? None of that happened.
Well,
period.
Those are all good points, Bill. But let me challenge you on a couple of things, because you've rolled a lot into that opening statement there. So first of all, let's go back. You call it the bummer summer. I like that. I've made a note of that. But you say that we've had half of the recovery that we had in the 1974 recession and the 1981 recession. And I acknowledge that that is true. However, some people would say, well, wait a minute. 74 and 81 recessions were not nearly as bad as this recession in 2008-2009. I mean, it was deeper, and possibly it's going to be more prolonged than either 71 or 74 or 81. So how would you address the fact that this is just significantly a much deeper, much more systemic problem than we had in 1974 and 1981?
The big difference, Billy, is that back in 74, and of course we get into 81 when Reagan was president, is that we had regulations on the books that were enforced. What has taken place since, let's say, 02, 03, is the meltdown was created. One of the biggest viruses in that was basically the mortgage industry originating subprime Alt-A and option ARM loans. When that happened, we have regulations out there today. We don't need any new regulations. It's just that the regulators did not enforce those regulations. As a result, our financial institutions took huge write-downs on their assets, mortgage-backed securities. At the same time, when you take a look at whatever happened to the transparency of all of the stimulus programs, we haven't seen any as to tell me about what's been appropriated, what's been committed, and what's been dispersed. That's one of the big problems. Now, if we look at what's happening currently today, this recovery just isn't making any headway at all. I have a list of about 26 solutions that could be applied to turn this economy around in the next 30 days. But the current administration seems to have a plan or an agenda that is not what's best for the American public. For example, look at the health care bill that many of them didn't even read, that was rammed down the American public's throat, saying that it was going to create $138 billion positive reduction to the deficit. The CBO comes out 3-4 weeks ago and says, nope, we made a mistake. It's going to be $118 billion addition to the deficit. There's one bill. How about the financial reform, FINRA they call it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's basically a disaster. How come Freddie and Fannie aren't in it? How come, as Paul Volcker, who is an advisor to the president, we call it the Volcker rule today, how come we're not going to reestablish the Glass-Steagall Act? At the same time, every state has a consumer protection agency, and we have one in Washington also. Why do we need a new one? Why do we need 243 more regulations in the financial environment today? Problem being, they've got it all wrong. I can't understand why they won't turn to what has worked. Look, Kennedy reduced taxes, Reagan reduced taxes, and Bush reduced taxes. All three worked. As much criticism as the president continues in his speech yesterday about the prior administration, one thing about the Bush tax cuts that the American public, the media doesn't seem to convey to them, is that by December of 07, revenues increased $793 billion, additional revenues from the Bush tax cuts. By the time we got to April of 08, they were pretty close to $823 billion. So the Bush tax cuts worked, especially for the rich, because those are the people that take the risk to create jobs. The problem on the Bush side, Billy, was that he never used the veto pen, and he let the Republican Congress, as John McCain says, spend like drunken sailors. That's where all those additions went. But the media doesn't seem to convey that. Yesterday, the president, he continues to attack Bush, but my question is, when are you going to accept responsibility for the office that you now hold and move forward? I have an old saying I use. I'm a professor now, and in all my classes, basically it's economics and so forth, and I say, you know what? There's no future in the past.
Very good. We're talking to Bill Sinclair, everybody. He's talking and commenting on President Obama's economic stimulus plan. Bill, there's so much that you wrapped into that last statement, but I want to come back to one thing. Then we're going to have to take a short break for some commercials. But you mentioned Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac as being two centerpieces of financial reform regulation that were not addressed. I would agree. But as a former banker, let's go back to, you know, when you were in your banking shoes. One of the things that was the safety net for any banker making a risky loan was the fact that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were there to support you if that loan turned south. They were the safety net that was there. Now, they were particularly amped up during the Clinton administration in the 1990s when it was stated that everybody should have a home, and then that continued on into the Bush administration. But as a former banker and looking at some of your colleagues that are in banking today, excluding the politicians for just a moment, Fannie and Freddie allowed you to make some of these risky loans. So in financial reform, if we don't address Fannie and Freddie, I understand that that's going to be a problem. But how much of, and I want to go back at the history side of this and say, how much of Fannie and Freddie's support did bankers really rely on to help them, to get them out of any trouble that they made from bad lending policies?
Well, let me give you a little history first, Billy. Fannie Mae was created under FHA in 1938, privatized in 1968 as a government-sponsored enterprise. How you take that public, I'm still trying to figure out how they did with Fannie and Freddie both as to the SEC, number one. Number two, Freddie Mac was created in 1970, basically as a secondary market source to sell loans to Freddie, then they were put into mortgage-backed securities, just like Fannie Mae, who's for the mortgage bankers at that time. Now, what was key then is we had prudent underwriting standards, no stated income, plenty of documentation, verification of deposit, verification of employment, FICO scores, everything. It worked like a dream. All of the five institutions that I was CEO of, basically that's all we did is originate single-family loans from a mortgage banking subsidiary, sell them to Freddie and Fannie. We'd get the servicing and fees. Their position was a secondary market source. Freddie and Fannie, they don't make loans. They buy loans.
Right.
It worked like a charm, Billy. Next thing you know, they become privatized, end up being publicly held companies, you may say. And all of a sudden, they decided, hey, you know what? Why don't we portfolio or keep some of these mortgage-backed securities because the rates were higher. The underwriting was forced upon them. In 1977, we had the Community Reinvestment Act established, which basically said you have to make loans to low-income people who, bottom line, couldn't qualify. That ended up at a 56% quota ratio in December of 07. That's one of the problems with Freddie and Fannie. They portfolioed some of these mortgage-backed securities, which ended up being worth 16 to 22 cents on the dollar, number one. Number two, guess what? They got into derivatives to make additional money because now they're a publicly held company, and the number one responsibility is shareholder value. Then they implied that the Federal Home Loan Mortgage Corporation and the Federal National, they implied that that federal in the title implied a federal guarantee. Now, these mortgage-backed securities were sold to central banks through conduits on Wall Street throughout the world. You see the virus that initiated a good portion of the meltdown. Freddie and Fannie should basically be done away with, but there has to be an organization like, let's take the 12 federal home loan banks now. Let them serve as a secondary market source because they can raise debt cheaply because of the different issues they now have the right to issue. Let them be the secondary market source. But I emphasize over and over again, prudent underwriting standards, 20% down, 10% down with private mortgage insurance, underwrite all of the specifics of the purchaser's financial background. Billy, that's where it went wrong. And Freddie and Fannie, unfortunately, were forced into having to make bad loans. I was a part-time advisor to David Maxwell when he was chairman of Fannie.
Mm-hmm.
He did a terrific job taking over that organization. And it was later, under the probably the realm of Franklin Raines, who used to run the Office of Management and Budget in the Clinton administration, there's where the downfall took place. Today, Freddie and Fannie used to have a $400 billion cap for capital, but Congress took that cap off in December of 2009, and guess who's on the hook to the ceiling now?
The taxpayers.
American taxpayers.
That's right. We're talking to Bill Sinclair, everybody. He is commenting on President Obama's economic stimulus plan. Bill, we've got to take a short break to do some commercials, do some business of our own. When we come back, I want to tackle the issue of taxes. So keep that in mind and think about it while we take this short commercial break.
And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
You know, I think your brain produces a chemical that blocks out my voice.
What? Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Bill Frank. You're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura County. Every show has a theme, and today's theme, what is the government doing? My first guest is Bill Sinclair. He's been a banker. He's been a politician. He's been in Washington, D.C. He understands the issues surrounding the economy, and we've been talking about President Obama's proposed economic stimulus plan that he presented in Detroit, Michigan yesterday. Just to recap, those three proposals are, number one, expand and permanently extend the R&D tax credits that expired back in 2009. Number two, allow business write-offs up to 100% of their investment in equipment and plants all the way through the year 2011. And finally, number three, pump another $50 billion into highway, rail, airport, and other infrastructure projects. So, Bill, let's bring it down. Most of the folks here in Ventura County are dealing with small businesses and don't really understand the big business mentality. So let's use a simple example, shall we, to illustrate the impacts of these ideas. Say you're a small business. You need a payroll clerk. Okay, you've got three options right now. You can hire a clerk and then pay the salary plus all of the attendant taxes and everything else that go with that. You can farm out the payroll to a payroll service, or three, you can buy a computer and software and do it yourself. Now, under President Obama's proposed economic plan, how do you think this is going to play out? How many jobs will be created as a result of his new proposal?
As a result of his new proposals today, Billy, I don't think you're going to create many jobs at all. And the reason being is the more that this man speaks, the more volatility and uncertainty that he is creating. If you take a look at just the FINRA bill itself, I mean, that is loaded with new regulations. Small businesses are the ones that are going to get hit first with all these new regs. At the same time, they're going to raise taxes. You know, he made a statement, if you make less than, what is it, $200,000?
$200,000 as an individual, $250,000
as a family. $250,000?
As a family.
Going to raise your taxes?
Right.
I mean, come on. There are 70 new taxes. Steve Moore of the Wall Street Journal wrote an editorial about 6 weeks ago about the 70 new, they call some of them taxes and some of them fees. The bottom line, if I'm running a small business, I'm going to get hit with additional taxes. I'm going to get hit with additional fees. And talking about hiring maybe a payroll clerk or buying the software or farming it out, I've got to take a look at my profitability, my P&L statement for the next year or maybe 3 years and say, how is this going to affect me when I don't know what's going to happen economically because of all of these new regs and all of the uncertainty? The one thing about every speech this man gives, he creates more uncertainty to the American business community more and more every day. That's what's causing great concern. That's why I say, you know, I don't believe that, as Joe Biden said the other day, we've turned the ship around and it's coming back to port. Well, Joe, my opinion is the ship is sinking just like the Titanic, and you happen to probably be known as the sailor of the year.
Right. Well, we're talking to Bill Sinclair, everybody. And since you brought up the subject of taxes, I do want to discuss that a little bit more in depth. President Obama is strongly against extending the Bush administration tax cuts. In fact, just for people to remind him, he said that the marginal income rate on people earning over $200,000 or families earning more than $250,000 is really what he's after. However, President Obama's former budget director, Peter Orszag, suggests that extending the tax cuts for a year or two is probably a good idea. So let me ask you, is that why Peter Orszag is the former budget director? And then why would President Obama disregard Mr. Orszag's advice?
First off, let's get to Peter Orszag. I believe that the reason he is the former budget director, Billy, is because Orszag could see that the president the administration is taking this economy in the wrong direction for recovery, period. He knows that. He's a smart guy. And when he said the other day, what he actually said is, he said, I believe that the Bush tax cuts should be extended for a minimum of a two-year period for everyone, because Orszag is intelligent enough to realize that it's those people that are making $250 and more, they're the ones that create a majority of the jobs. 70-80% of the jobs in this country come from small businesses, and that's what's most important. Orszag knows that. So given that, the direction that we have to take is to find a way to create jobs, because 70% of our economy is consumer spending. Right now, consumer spending is down big time. Consumer confidence is in the tank. So there are many different things, and I believe behind closed doors, I've been told this by people in Washington, the economic team really consists of, you have Volcker and Larry Summers, along with
Tim Geithner,
who's the Treasury Secretary.
Mm-hmm.
Many times they have agreed, let's look at a holiday on the payroll tax, the corporate tax, lowering that, at the same time looking at FICA, different things. They come up with firm plans that could assist in turning this economy around in a positive direction. They go into the Oval Office and you find Emanuel, Goolsbee, and Axelrod. Basically, when they leave, from what I've been told, most of the time they tell the president that's not the thing to do. My example would be Glass-Steagall, proprietary trading, along with just several other ideas that Volcker has come up with. And Larry Summers and Geithner agree with him. So there's where you get into trouble.
All right. Well, Bill, we're talking to Bill Sinclair, everybody. We're debating back and forth the economic stimulus plan. Let me just throw something out there with no political agenda behind this question whatsoever. But if you look at corporate tax rates, okay, roughly speaking, corporate tax rates in the late 1980s were the same here in the United States as they were in Europe. Europe in 2009 lowered their corporate tax rates. They're approximately half of the corporate tax rates here in the United States, yet the European economy does not seem to be recovering. So how does lowering corporate tax rates support your theory of economic growth and job creation?
Let's say if we take the corporate tax rate from 35%, let's just take it down to 25%. And if you can take a look at how much more capital that would give the private sector to invest and expand, there's where you're going to create jobs, there's where wages are going to increase, and that's what's going to assist in turning the economy around. The only other country in the world that has a higher corporate tax than the United States is Japan. And this is something that has to be done. The one thing that the president doesn't seem to address at all, he doesn't create incentives for the private sector, that's small businesses and big businesses, to have the incentive to make the moves to start expanding and growing and taking more risk by decreasing and reducing the corporate tax rate just to 25% would send a message to the private sector that it's time to get off the starting blocks and start the race.
All right, but we're talking to Bill Sinclair, everybody. Bill, we've only got about a minute left, so I'm going to give you a real simple softball question, and that is this. President Obama's economic plan that he proposed yesterday, Congress is out campaigning right now. So will President Obama's economic plan be passed before the November elections? And if they're not, how important are these proposals anyway then?
first off, they're not important at all. When he came out and he talked about the $50 billion plan, and then he said, and it's paid for. Then in the next sentence, he says something like, because we're going to work real close with Congress to see that it is. So you see, you know, it just doesn't work. That's nothing more than a political ploy to let the American public, here's what I'm doing, another stimulus plan that'll turn things around. Well, so far, he has been consistent. Nothing has worked, Billy.
All right, we're talking to Bill Sinclair. Bill, we're going to have to leave it there, my friend. We'll have you back in the future to debate some very specific points about the economy, because this is a subject that's on everybody's mind. It should be top of mind when everybody goes to the ballots on November the 4th here in the United States. Thank you so much for being our guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain.
Thank you.